What's up, everybody? We're back today with another interview. This is one of Tavis's good friends, Brett Caldwell. He started out here in Dallas, but he's coming to us today from Atlanta. He has quite the journey, and he just spits nuggets of knowledge throughout this podcast. You're going to want to get to a place where you can take some notes, because this isn't a nuts and bolts interview on how to invest in certain things, although he does talk about his investing journey, but he's coming to us from the leadership side of things. He helps run an organization. He owns multiple franchises of Keller Williams, and he helps manage over 2,000 agents. And the path from where he started to where he is today has just helped him develop a great mindset and a lot of knowledge that I think you're going to enjoy. So without further ado, here is Brett Caldwell.
But at the end of the day, success doesn't come easy. It can come simple, but it doesn't come easy. Now, it's easy to hire somebody to do things you don't like to do. I'm happy to hire somebody to come clean my toilets. I'm happy to hire somebody to cut my lawn. I may not be happy to hire somebody to do something that I kind of enjoy.
You are now listening to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast.
You see this guy here staring back at you? That's your toughest opponent. Every time you get into the ring, that's who you're going against. I believe that in boxing, and I do believe that in life.
Your weekly deep dive into DFW real estate, life, and beyond. With your hosts, Tavis Westbrook and Ashton Hines.
Well, good morning and welcome to the Real Estate Heavyweights Podcast, an interview edition. It's been a little bit since we have done an interview, but we have found one of the best in the real estate industry. It's a good friend of Tavis Westbrook, and his name is Brett Caldwell. He comes to us from Atlanta, but he spent plenty of time in the DFW area, and we're so happy to have him with us this morning. Brett, how
I'm
you doing?
I'm doing awesome, man. Thanks for the invite. I heard you. The podcast is Real Estate Heavyweights. I didn't know if I should be honored or offended, but I'm here, so let's go.
We'll count you as one of the. We'll count you as an industry heavyweight. I'll take care of the cheeseburger portion, and you can be an industry heavyweight.
Ashton, you can't tell from the Zoom here or the the video, but Brent's 6'7". You know, I don't think he's in the 300 club anymore. He used to be, but
I'm slimming down these days.
There you go. Well, the one time I actually was in a box, I did one amateur boxing match, and I boxed a guy that was 6'9". He was 6'9", 273 when we weighed in. So if I see you, I may try to size you up a little bit just to see how it goes.
Did you win?
I won the first round. We went three rounds. I won the first round and lost the second. And honestly, he didn't punch any at all the first round. And then he figured out, wait a minute, I'm way bigger than this guy. So it didn't go well after that. But he didn't knock me down. He didn't knock me out. So I'll count that as
there
a victory.
You go.
So that was a one and done deal. Perfect. So, Brett, I know you and Tavis go way back. Y'all have a history. But, you know, why don't you give us just kind of a brief rundown as to your history with real estate? I know you're in the title world for a while, and kind of catch us up to speed as to where you are
now.
Yeah,
I'll give you the short version. Grew up in Plano, Texas, and went to Texas Tech. And then coming out of college, like most people at that age, was excited, but didn't really know what I wanted my career path to be. But I knew I didn't want to live in a cubicle environment. So a friend of the family encouraged me to get into real estate. And literally, I graduated college May 15th, moved home May 16th, and started real estate school May 17th. And so my entire career has been in the real estate industry right out of college. Sold for a number of years, ended up getting my broker's license. And in my mid to late 20s, I got a tap on the shoulder for the first time to go work in the title industry. And I did business development for about 3 years. That's actually where I met Tavis. And, you know, one of the principles in life is if you show up and do your best every day, people will notice. And that tap on the shoulder came again. And that's when I ended up going back into the leadership side of Keller Williams Realty. And ended up in a assistant leadership role out in the Frisco, Texas market, helped launch the Prosper Salina Keller Williams. And then, of course, tap on the shoulder again, And I ended up migrating down to Dallas Preston Road, which I know both of you are agents at Dallas Preston Road, in 2006, 2007. And I was the team leader, CEO, whatever you want to call it, of Dallas Preston Road for just, I think, 6 months shy of a decade. And in 2017, I got another tap on the shoulder to move to Atlanta, Georgia, to work for the Southeast region of Keller Williams, which is basically Tennessee, Georgia, and Alabama. And then after 3 years in that stint, I stepped out of that position and took over a group of offices here in Atlanta. So today, my title is operating principal, but I've got 7 different Keller Williams franchises, 1 in Rockwall, Texas, and 6 in Atlanta, Georgia. I think it's like 11 different brick and mortar locations, just shy of about 2,000 agents that are kind of in my organization these days. So that's the long and the short of who I am and in the career path I took to get here. I'm sure we'll dive in further.
Yeah, definitely. So I know one of the things that Tavis was, kind of talk about a little bit is how did starting out in the title world, you know, how does that translate now your understanding of actual agent side? And I know you do a lot more leadership training and you're not actually out selling houses and that sort of thing. But how does that knowledge of the title world kind of carry over?
Sure. The biggest thing I took out of the title world is I had a mentor named Lynn Lyncher. She just recently passed, but she taught me a thing called Socratic selling. And it's a term taken from Socrates. And it's literally the principle of selling through questions, meaning if okay. I was going to sell you a pencil, what are the 10 questions I could ask you to actually want to buy that pencil instead of me trying to do a statement presentation? I actually consult you into making that choice. And that principle has lasted me or has lended me great success over my career, because I think one of the success principles of life is learning how to live life and succeed through life by asking great questions. And one of the acronyms I was given years ago was an acronym called COOL, K-O-O-L, by Dick Dillingham. And it stands for being a keen observer of life. And you can't be a keen observer of life if you don't live life with questions. Meaning, I want to know why that was the way it was. I want to know why that house sold fast. I want to know why that person succeeded and this person didn't succeed. And if you understand that questions are a door that opens knowledge, you just kind of take on that persona. And Tavis, you're right. I mean, anybody that has any kind of relationship with me, unfortunately, probably gets asked a lot of questions, right?
Nice. Well, let's shift gears just a little bit. As far as training leaders, one of the things I was curious about, because you've gone from the agent level, now you're doing more of like a leadership level. So what are some of the key characteristics that you look for in an agent, and that also translates to a higher level leader, that our core leadership values of like, look, if you can't nail these two or three things down, real estate sales may not be for you.
Yeah, of course. Work ethic is always going to be at the top of the list, right? Like, you can't succeed in life if you don't institute some level of work ethic. And you might use the word discipline. You might use the word grind. You might use the word grit. But at the end of the day, success doesn't come easy. It can come simple, but it doesn't come easy. But it doesn't necessarily come hard either. It just means that somebody put the time on task over time. You know, if you've ever read any of the books like Talent is Overrated or Outliers, you know, they all talk about that 10,000-hour journey. And, you know, basically the way you translate a 10,000-hour journey is you spent 10,000 hours on one singular task, which usually insert the word boring, insert the word grind, insert the word not sexy, right? But you spent time on that task, and over time it becomes second nature. That's why my golf game sucks, guys. I've not spent 10,000 hours learning golf. Yet I wish I would, but it's a hobby to me, not a commitment of time. And so from your question around what's it take to succeed as an agent, what's it take to succeed as a leader, you have to make a choice at some point in time. What are you going to spend your 10,000 hours on? And the problem with that is you have a limited resource called time. So you have to make a choice of what you're going to spend that 10,000 hour journey on. You know, I'll never forget Tavis and I were driving back, I think, from Austin, Texas on a mega camp retreat, which is just kind of like a convention. And Tavis and I actually had this conversation. Like, he was doing a retail business. He was trying to mentor other agents, but he was also had this investment side of his business, right? And if you think about that in just this conversation, his 10,000 hours was spread amongst a bunch of different things. And I think you, Tavis, I don't want to speak for you, but I believe you made a commitment that day that you were going to put your 10,000 hour journey into investment real estate. Yeah,
for
right?
sure. And I tell that story often, especially anybody in the KW world when we're talking mega camp, just, you know, from the nuggets. And, you know, the big thing for me at that time was, you know, talking about niche. So it was not only the discussion of niche and then you and I driving 4 hours back from Austin that day, but it was also the perfect timing for me because, you know, we came out of the crash, you know, that was 2009, August of 2009. And so it was just right on the kind of the very, very bottom of the curve to start kind of up, you know, trending upward. And we're trying to figure out what's next. And it was kind of, you know, we've been in survival mode over the last couple of years prior to that. And so that was a great time to kind of shift my focus. And, you know, that's when I started facilitating other investors, you know, to buy REO. And that was kind of where I cut my teeth and started growing in that sector. So Ashton and I kind of mentioned that yesterday. I actually brought that up because, of course, he's asking, hey, what's the story on Brett? So we kind of talked about that. But no, I think you're absolutely right. And Ashton's in that transition mode right now as well, kind of trying to transition into this full time. And I've got other kind of mentees, you know, and a nephew of mine, my son Anthony, all in that kind of crossroads right now going, how do we get in full time? And I think what you're saying is great because it's hard sometimes to explain it, you know, for perspective for somebody brand new, not in the business to understand it, because I'm going to celebrate 20 years this year. So it's, you know, it's sometimes hard to remember some of those beginning things of the mindset and the routines, you know, the routine, the daily routine. And over time, you kind of get jaded on what works for me and what doesn't work for me. So like Ashton's having all these conversations with me like yesterday about different lead gen and buying leads and different sources. And, you know, I'm trying to be open-minded with it and respond, but, you know, I'm kind of jaded in the sense of like what works for me and what doesn't work for me.
Yeah. Here's the advice I usually give people is in the beginning, you should try all facets, right? But you realize later in your career, there's a facade to what you see in success, meaning it looks complex. But the truth is, they all dove in on one singular strategy that made them very successful, and then they added other branches later. But they tried a lot of things in the beginning, and the faster they found that one thing they wanted to commit to on that 10,000-hour journey, the faster that success really took off. But if you look at a highly successful person today, it looks complex because they have a lot of layers to it. But if you really stripped it down, you would notice that they actually succeeded on a singular layer. Now, that's hard to explain because most people see dollar signs in all the different layers, meaning Tavis was making money mentoring other people. Tavis was making money on retail business. Tavis was making money on investor business. So it's not an easy decision to go, yeah, I think I'm going to go all in on this, because there is income streams that attached to all the different facets, but big income streams come from an expertise. a niche. I heard a speaker recently that was challenging the room around if your whole expertise or your definition of who you are was defined to one word, what's the word? And I transparently, I kind of struggled with that concept because one word is singular and we want to be known as all these things. But the truth is, time as a limited resource actually only allows our expertise to be known for one great thing. You know, I mean, everybody goes on their own journey, and you're never going to find that one great thing if you don't try a lot of things.
Right.
But the faster you find that one great thing, the faster you find big success.
Yeah. And I think part of, you know, from my experience, one thing is if you can find a quick win in one of those categories and it gives you a little bit of wind behind your sails, it's really easy. If you're struggling for a while and it's, you think you're doing the right thing, but maybe you just picked the wrong path. And I think that's also where mentors and seeing actual success through people of like, no, I did it. You can do it. And so that was actually one of my questions for you is, do you find it to be harder for people to stick with something long enough to succeed or to recognize when they're on the wrong path and cut bait and do something else? What do you think is the harder thing to do?
Staying on the path.
Hmm.
The problem with staying on the path is it's boring. Success is actually really boring. And it's mundane and it's grit. And I mean, if you just take like a Tiger Woods, for instance, and you use the golf analogy, you got to imagine over the 10,000-hour journey he put in, it wasn't all tournaments. It was him sitting there by himself hitting golf shots. And I don't know about you, but by the end of a bucket of balls, I get a little bored just by one bucket of balls. That dude's probably hit 10,000 buckets of balls, right? Like, you have to have a passion for it, and you have to have a commitment that causes you to persevere through the boring. But at the end, that's the sweet spot, right? And the truth is it doesn't get sweet only when you finish. It gets sweeter along the journey. But there's moments where you're like, this sucks. This is boring. This, man, I've been doing this every day. It's like going to the gym, right? Like you do the same exercise every day, all the time. You know what I mean? Like our brain wants to do different things. But the truth is that one thing actually causes our success to happen quick great.
I think passion's a big word, right? I think that's, you know, something to connect to as far as a tangible reason to keep going, right? It's something that you can connect to, and when you're talking about the story, you're passionate about what you've done and where you're going and what your goals are and how they connect. I think it's big, right? If it's just money driven, or it's just I see this other person doing it and look how successful they are, and look at, you know, the fancy cars and everything they're doing, and you're just kind of focused on that, it's not going to be enough, right? And like there's, you're never going to get there with just looking at somebody else going, well, I want to be there. I want to be that, who that person is or who I think that person is. You know, that's the problem today with Instagram and Facebook and all the social media, as you see all the splash, and it makes people change their trajectory to go, oh, that's where I want to go. I want to go there. I want to go in that business, you know, because that looks great, without really understanding or have any kind of connection back to it. So, Brett, I'll ask you this, because I've known your path.
Hang on. I want to comment on that real quick. So all the HGTV shows make it look great. How does that enter your world?
Yeah, you know, I stopped watching them over the years.
Yeah, but here's the problem. They're very popular. Why?
Because because they're dramatic, and they're also, everybody, I think, has some sort of interest when it comes to, you know, home decor, and real estate's relatable, right? At the end of the day, I mean, I think everybody kind of has that bottom line American dream to own a house and all of these different things. So I think it's super relatable. Plus, it's full of drama, and there's so many things that go wrong, and there's so many things that, you know, end up looking beautiful, and the transformations and the different things. So, I mean, it's it's intriguing, right? I mean, and obviously the producers do a really good job of emphasizing on certain things over other things. And of course, you know, years ago with the flipping shows, of course, they hide all the real soft cost or the closing cost aspects, and they just give you gross numbers, and it looked super attractive and sexy to flip a house without really getting into it, you know. But it's sold.
I mean, it makes everybody feel like it's easy. And they want to do it. It just kind of back to the career thing. Like we look online and think it looks really easy, and we start chasing what people are doing when it's not exactly like that. Just like HGTV is not exactly like that.
So
right?
So Brett, I'll dig in a little bit deeper because I think, you know, this is great. And I mean, I think when you started out in real estate, obviously, leadership and coaching and all these different things you're doing now, obviously, wasn't aligned for you. I don't know if that even, you know, was something that you even knew was out there, right, necessarily. But the opportunities, like you said, the tap on the shoulder, you know, kind of presented this opportunity. And then you've kind of grown with that over the years. And I've seen you kind of, you know, build and grow. I mean, I would say your one word, if I had to describe you, would be leadership, because that's kind of where you've been as long as I've known you in that world, right? In some type of way, some type of facet, that's kind of where you've grown. And it's obviously multiplied into now multiple ownerships and different offices. And, you know, I know you bought into a business a few years ago and had big hopes and dreams with that. You know, maybe you can touch on that a little bit.
We shut that one down.
Yeah. But maybe you can talk about that a little bit, because that's, I think, a good example of kind of following a direction that you felt good about in the beginning, or you were kind of chasing that and really wanted to make it work. And at some point you're like, yeah, this isn't for me.
Sure. I mean, listen, I lived my life to a certain point where I realized I had never actually failed. And it actually scared me, but it didn't stop me, but it scared me. I really hadn't had any failures. You know, just like most people, my squirrel brain said, oh, I can do this. And I felt invincible. And what I really learned is I started a business and tried to lead it to success, but I was never in it. The truth of it is, my success is because I'm an operator and a leader. And if I'm not actually operating and leading, I should be other people's money investing in somebody else. But I didn't have clarity on that. It was my money, my leadership, but not my operating. And it was a bad formula that I didn't recognize fast enough. Lost quite a few hundred grand on that venture, but it was an incredible learning experience. And it just goes back to our conversation earlier of stay in your lane. It's boring, but stay in your lane. That's where your success comes from. Everybody has a core genius. It just, the faster you find your core genius, and you stay in that core genius, the faster your income goes up, the faster your life improves, the faster your wealth goes, all that stuff. And even to this day, like, I don't manage my own rental properties. I have somebody that's their core genius, right? I could do it and save the commission, but it would not be a good thing because I'm not the operator of it. I need somebody that I pay that manages all my properties, and he does an incredible job of it.
Yeah, I think one of the skills, I've been doing a lot of research. Actually, I've really been looking into getting a $6 an hour VA. You know, I've talked about it for a while. I'm trying to come out of a full-time job. I have limited hours that I can do certain things, and I'm doing social media and reels and podcasts, and I'm trying to build a business and work leads. And it's like, okay, I think I could use this. And one of the muscles they say you have to really learn early on is delegation, being able to recognize like, hey, I'm not the best at everything. And I might be really good at some things, but it's okay to say, hey, you take this. And then learning how to delegate, learning how to manage that person is this little muscle that you have to massage early on. And then you get, okay, actually, let's do it this way. And then you can grow into a bigger business. And I think that's a huge leap going from
just kind of a solopreneur and solo agent to actually growing. And instead of growing, like I'm a real estate agent, you're actually building a business, an actual business, and you're paying attention to statistics and KPIs. And that can be boring and not sexy. But if you don't, then you're just kind of guessing what you think might work. And you're just sort of throwing things out into the wind and seeing, you know, at the end of the year, you're like, well, I think I have more money this year. And I've fallen into that, you know, where you're just, you think you're doing the right things, but then when you really start breaking it down. So from a business owner standpoint, is that something that you've always felt like you've been decent at, or like paying attention to the soft skills? You seem like you're real personable and great with people, and the soft skills part probably came fairly easy for you. But the management and the KPIs and all the ledgers and stuff, is that something that you had to learn, or how did that go for you?
Yeah, of course. Everything's a learning curve. I mean, you can't shortcut the learning process. But the truth of it, Ashton, is I'm a disaster if I don't have great people around me. And it's because, not that I can't do it, it's just not my best time on my dollar per hour, right? They do it better than I did it. Just like I've got some video content and I publish a lot of content, and my virtual assistant does all the editing. He does all the publishing, all everything, right? And all I do is show up and film it and send it off to him in a Google Drive. Therefore, I can be content, but if I were to sit down at the computer and do all the editing and try to get the marketing right, and then I got to go post it on all the social channels or the podcast channels and all that stuff, that's not my highest dollar per hour. So, yes, if I can leverage that off, it keeps me building more content, or it keeps me spending time with you guys. It keeps me spending time with my top agents. It keeps me in my high dollar per hour. It's a learned task. It's a scary task, meaning when you get from self-employed to business, which means you're now succeeding through others, there's a cost to that, right? And now you have a responsibility around making payroll. You have a responsibility around leading somebody else on how to help you grow. And it's a learning curve. But a lot of people, the fear of that actually keeps them from growing, because they're never willing to take that leap. And that's one of the hardest leaps in life, is when you actually hire somebody. Now, it's easy to hire somebody to do things you don't like to do. I'm happy to hire somebody to come clean my toilets. I'm happy to hire somebody to cut my lawn. I may not be happy to hire somebody to do something that I kind of enjoy and I'm decent at, but it's probably not what I should be doing.
For sure. I mean, and the practices that I've been going through is doing a time study and writing down the stuff. Okay, let's just keep track of what you are doing. Okay, now go through, what are the things that you hate doing? Okay, those are kind of low-hanging fruit. Let's just figure out how to get rid of that. And then, like you said, what are the things that you probably shouldn't be doing? And then the friction point for me is, you know, there's also a finite resource of money. You know, it's like, okay, so I could technically hire all this away, but I really, you know, financially probably shouldn't. And so then you have to kind of hold on, and then there's this kind of push-pull thing. And but I feel like I'm kind of in that growth period of trying to go from doing everything I get up pretty early and I work as hard as I can, you know, and I'm okay with digging a ditch as long as you tell me there's something on the other side. I'll do it. You tell me that, I'll do it. And so for me is finding that kind of that vision and knowing Tavis and having a good mentor that's several years down the road and who has some long-term rentals and has a business and he's worked with these guys over and over. And so, you know, for you, like, what are some of the tips you could give people that are out there? I would say more people are on my side of things.
Yeah. Clarity is the first tip, meaning you got to have clarity on what your highest dollar per hour activity looks like. So if we took a 40-hour work week, which we know none of us work 40-hour work weeks, but if we took a 40-hour work week, and you spent 20 of those hours doing high dollar per hour activities and 20 of those hours doing low level administrative stuff, and you hired somebody to take those 20 hours off your plate, in theory, you should replace those with the same activities you were doing with the other 20 hours, which were the high dollar per hour activities, right? Not everybody does that, but if now you have 40 high dollar per hour activity hours in your day or your week, and then you got somebody doing 20 hours of the low dollar per hour activities, your income goes double or some derivative of, sure. Of an X, right? But what happens is people hire somebody and then they take those other 20 hours and they go to the golf course, or they just do the same activities and then just hired somebody to do the stuff they don't want to do. But the truth is they're probably going to do some of the stuff you want to do and you like to do, but you shouldn't right. be doing. And that's the clarity you've got to get, because control is the word that everybody uses. I don't want to lose control. I don't want to let go of control. I'm a control freak. We all are. Stop saying that, because we all have that in our DNA to some degree. But the minute you get, if you keep telling yourself that, you will believe it. But you've got to stop saying, I don't want to let go of control. I'm a control freak. You got to start saying, hey, I'm going to control the process. I'm going to control the leadership of it. I'm going to control the management of it, but I'm not going to control the activity of it. And when you get your head there, you'll actually start to leverage. But I mean, we all have control. Like, I'll never forget the very first rental house I ever bought with Tavis. This is a story about control.
And you were on the golf course.
I was on the golf course in Ojai, California, and I told Tavis, I want to buy my first rental property. So he calls me and he says, hey, I got a wholesaler that's letting go of this property in Allen, and he wants $65,000 for it. You got to pay $65,000 for this house. Now, this is, oh my gosh, yeah, almost 15 years ago.
Many years ago.
And I literally tucked a call and I said, Tavis, I can't buy a house that I've never walked in. I'll just have to wait on the next one. I'm in California on a vacation, on the golf course. I can't do it. He said, I think you're crazy. I only have till 5 o'clock if you want this house. So I literally hung up the phone and said no. And luckily, the person I was with, I was telling them the situation, and they looked at me and they said, you're an idiot. And I said, what do you mean? She said, you asked him for his expertise and his leverage. He's given it to you. And now you're telling him it's not worth, you don't trust it and you're not worth it. It's not true. And I was like, damn it. So I called Tavis back. And I said, what's at risk here? He said, your $1,000 earnest money or whatever it is. And I said, you know what? Do it. If I lose $1,000, I lose $1,000. And mind you, that property is now free and clear. It's probably worth $300,000, maybe $270,000. And it cash flows. And I still own it. But if I let control get in my way, my net worth would have been a $300,000 hit. And so that control is that switch in our brain that if you can't get your head wrapped around it, in that scenario, it would have cost me $300,000. But in a hiring an assistant conversation, it could be $100,000 worth of income. It could be 200,000. I mean, it could be infinite, right? We don't know exactly what those numbers are, but we don't allow ourselves to be our best self because of control. And you've got to learn how to get through that. And I'm telling that story to say none of us are immune to it. We just got to start to talk to our brains differently around what is it that you must maintain control over and what can you let go of control over. If anybody's married, everybody goes into the marriage thinking they can control everything, and they realize later on there is no control. It's all free will, right? And you just can't control people, and you can't control your business in the sense of trying to control how every minute detail is will keep you at a low level. You still have control. It's just you're controlling the process and the leadership, not the activity.
Yeah. And I, you know, and for me, and I know we're getting a little bit close to your time. You got a life and business and all that. But, you know, for me, I think that's actually where finding good people to do business with and sort of attaching yourself to people who've already made some of those decisions, you can release almost from the beginning, you can release some of that control to them, whether it's, you know, their training or their infrastructure and that sort of thing. It's super helpful. They've kind of laid that path to where you don't have to just reinvent the wheel all the time. And when you kind of realize like, okay, I do that in this instance, I do that in this instance. Okay, why would it not translate to this? You can start to, like I said earlier, you know, build that muscle and, you know, really, really, you know, get used to that. So
yeah. You never have to reinvent the wheel. You can innovate, but there is always somebody that's walked before us that has life experience that you can draw from.
Yeah.
And in that scenario, I drew from Tavis, but it took somebody on the golf course with me giving me a tough statement to go, you know what? You're right. I had to have Tavis in Dallas saying, this is a good deal. This is the expert conversation. This is why you should do it. And I needed somebody on that golf course in California telling me, hey, you're stuck in your own head, idiot. Get out of your head and make some money.
I will, and I want to say a few things just to kind of wrap this up, but get into that. I think what's cool about that situation that you talk about, when you bought your next rental property, it was so much easier for you, right? And that one you actually found on yourself, yeah. But I believe it was like a Saturday afternoon or something, and you called me. You're like, hey, I got this lead, got this opportunity, come walk it, tell me what you think. And I mean, I walked it, you know, we were there maybe 30 minutes and you wrote up the offer and pulled the trigger and it was way easier. Right. And that's been a great purchase for you as well. Right. I mean, that's been another phenomenal deal again.
That one was a friend knew that I bought rental property and they had a friend that was going through a divorce and the house was going to be foreclosed on. And they called me and said, what do you think you could do? I'll buy it from you to save your credit. I said, but I believe I can't pay much more than this, but it'll get you out of the house and save you from having a foreclosure yet. And he said, I don't care. I'm walking away anyway. So I bought that house for $157,000. I think I only owe like $40,000 on it. And it's probably worth $500,000 to $600,000 today.
Wow.
And it's always rented.
Yeah. Of course, it's on the golf course, so you can't shake and stick at that, right?
Which means I have to budget for roof and windows.
But besides, you know, when you have tenants in there, I guess you can't collect the golf balls. But I mean, your property manager, I think, might collect those for you. He seems like he's pretty good at doing that. Now, I don't know if he's going to share the good ones with you or not, but.
He gives me a birthday present. I don't know why, because I just turn around and give him back to the golf course.
Shout out to Mike.
I don't know how golf made it all into our conversation today, but it certainly is a good analogy.
So another thing real quick, one thing, I want to give you the opportunity to put your podcast out there. And by the way, if your virtual assistant's doing your graphics and your intro, I mean, that's killer. So we might have to steal some of that, but it's phenomenal. I thought they did a great job with the coffee cup intro and all that. So that's pretty cool. And then the next thing would be, you know, you're tapping in. Obviously, as we get older, and you know, you and I haven't even got into the fun stuff and our road trips and all the different discussions we've had over the years. But here's what's cool is I think you and we haven't done it in a long time, but we used to hold each other accountable. At the end of the year, coming into the new year, doing goal setting, and you know, and I think you know that really helped us both. You know, we did really good, and we could you know connect with each other once a quarter and kind of check things off our list. And wealth building has obviously always been you know a big important factor to us. I think as we get older, it's now become a little bit more defined of what we want that to look like and the reasons for it. But I just want to touch on that because obviously that's part of a point of our podcast is talking about that. And obviously the vehicle to get there for us in the industry is real estate. One of the things that you had said, and that I'm glad you brought up the life lesson, the failure, you know, that you experienced with buying in that business, because, and maybe this goes back to kind of the boring conversation in some sense, right? Because real estate, once you get in it, you've been in it so long. I've been in it 20 years. You've been in it, you know, like a few more years than me. You know, it's the same thing all the time, right? So I remember you saying, like, I know I want to get outside of real estate and buy into a business that's not related to real estate, right? And I think you had some other reasons for that. But what I'm hearing you say from that experience and going through it is you've learned a lot, not only with yourself with that piece, and it wasn't necessarily that it wasn't because it wasn't in real estate that it failed, but it wasn't part of your day-to-day activities that you were involved in from a leadership role that you looked at and said, okay, stay in my lane, right? And I know I'm throwing a lot at you at one time, so you can kind of pick it apart, but.
Well, you can make money in your yep. lane, and you can invest in other people's lanes. Yep. Don't skew the lines between your core genius and your wealth. Meaning, if your income comes from your core genius, let your wealth come from other people's core geniuses and or investing in something that's a long-term play that you feel comfortable in. But where I failed was I skewed my core genius, my operating ability, and trying to make something over there succeed without me being all in on operating and my core genius.
So what's your podcast?
I don't have a podcast today. I do a lot of video content around leadership coffee talk and a lot of video content around what we call the Mojo Monday. We've talked about making them podcasts. If I'm the most listens on this podcast, I'll take notice and maybe I'll call you guys.
Yeah. If we go to Joe Rogan level, we'll let you know and it'll all be because of you.
One little piece in getting you guys there, I'll feel a part of the real estate heavyweights.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, we really, really appreciate it. I know we could sit here and I know you and Tavis have spent out literally hours and hours in a car. How many states have you guys been to at this 43. Point together?
Yeah. 43.
How many?
43
states. These are road trip kings. They just get in a car, drive in a direction. They kind of have a sort of loose period of time that they're going to try to get from point A to point B. And that's it. It sounds awesome. So I know you guys have a lot y'all could talk about for hours and hours, but Brett, I know you got a day ahead of you and we really appreciate the nuggets. I'm sure we could have you back and kind of pick another direction for leadership. We haven't really had kind of this type of talk yet. We've done a lot of, you know, nuts and bolts investing and that sort of thing. So I really appreciate your insight into leadership and you've had some great experience with businesses. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Would love to come back. Thank you guys. Yeah, you're doing awesome.
Thanks, Brett. All right, man. Well, thanks for listening. I hope you guys have a great day. We'll talk to you next time.